Hi guys, this is Greg here and welcome to the Just a Meme podcast where we chat about the future of making money on the web. Today we have a really special guest. Hessel is joining us from the Tribe of Noise where they're trying to help independent artists to make money. Welcome Hessel.
Hey Greg, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So kind of jumping straight in really, tell us a bit about yourself, like what's your background and what has your journey been so far?
Sure. So, looking at my gray hair, you might understand that I've been around in the internet business for quite a bit, 20 plus years. My background is industrial automation. So, zeros and ones and robots and big factory plants. But moving forward, I ended up in IT. And from IT, I actually ended up in 2008 trying to solve an annoying thing on the internet, and that's that independent artists, when they upload music, it's super difficult for them to actually find an easy way to reach their audience, you know, the people with money that are actually interested in licensing their song for a YouTube video or a documentary or an advertisement. So it's super difficult for them to make that connection. And for us, we at that time were running a video production company. We didn't want to settle for stock music because we hate stock music. We don't like it. And we wanted to have access to original content from real talent. And so that's where our journey started in roughly in 2008, setting up a basic community website. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the websites in those days like MySpace.
That still rings a bell. Okay. Social networks.
So we looked at MySpace, and one of the good things was that it actually empowered a lot of individuals to you know create a website, upload their content, promote themselves in any way they wanted, and even if you were interested in animated GIFs and flashy purple lights in the background, so you could do all that on MySpace. We were like, actually, you know, one of the good things there is that you actually help independent artists to present them the way they are, and hopefully it does connect. But of course, on MySpace, it was more about the social journey and helping them to connect with fans. And we were more interested than in the promise, like, but can we also generate a bit of cash for you? So that's when our journey with Tribe of Noise started. But in those days, 2008, we actually used MySpace to do desk research, reach out to individual artists, ask them if they were interested in teaming up with us, non-exclusively, like, you know, never overpromise, always underpromise. So always saying like, you know, don't give up your daytime job, but we have the idea that we can actually somehow hook you up with people with money. They're interested in original music. And fast forward to today, there are roughly 50,000 individual artists who joined Tribe of Noise globally, like, you know, from every corner of this planet, 190 plus countries that we see people joining. And of course, we can't serve them all at the same time with enough money that they can call them professional musicians every single day. But we do our utmost. So, you know, really try to pull this off for as many musicians. So that's a bit of the background where I come from. And we have a super dedicated team. So the folks that joined us in 2008, most of them are still with us. Everybody does this, not just like, you know, let's try to grow Tribe of Noise into the biggest thing ever and make venture capital firms happy. No. We are, by the way, we are a commercial enterprise, so it's not that we do want to make money and a profit in the end of the day. But first things first, help the independent artist, make sure that we as a company have social impact, so that you know, a musician in Ghana or Senegal or Indonesia has the same opportunity as you know, the one in downtown London. So, you know, it's about their music, and if we can monetize their music, that's great, and we will pay out the same money to the person in London than we do to the one in Accra in Ghana, for example.
So how does that different from like the Spotify's, and why is that system broken, I guess, compared to what you guys are offering?
what Spotify and the team of Spotify did really, really, really well, and so I love them for that, is they actually democratized the way we use music now on our mobile phones and smart speakers and car stereos, and so they really made that possible, that access to music has never been so easy as today, thanks to people like Daniel Ek and his team, and but also Tidal and Deezer and all the other services out there. So that's great. Where I think we can do much more than Spotify will ever be able to do is that we actually are not a consumer-centric company, but we are more like a musician-centric company. So we're looking at the value chain of the music industry. Mm. We go like, okay, somebody is making money here because they're selling a subscription for £20 per month. And how does that money travel back through the value chain to the people who actually created that song?
Mm.
And then you can do two things. You can say like, okay, so you're getting $5 and you're getting $5. And in the end, you're paying 50 cents to the composers. Let's put it that way. That's a model. And you don't touch the value chain. And that's actually what happened to Spotify and the other ones. So they democratized like the way music is transported to your mobile phones and to the other places. But they never touched the value chain in a way. They're still paying out all these in between middlemen. And some are adding value. And some, it's just a big question mark, like what's your added value in this value chain? What Tribe of Noise did was try to shorten that value chain. So you have the content creator and you have somebody with a bag of money who wants to pay for a license. Take everybody out just for a sec, just all the middlemen out, and try to create a system and then bring back, for example, the label or bring back the publisher and say like, hey, if you can add value, then you're more than welcome to join. But that way, the value chain is super short.
Mm.
So the money actually traveling back to the rights holder or to the creator is there's more money.
Yeah,
it travels faster. So we pay out every single month. And you probably hear from time to time when you talk to musicians like, oh, after 18 months, somebody, I got a check for five euros or whatever. I have no idea where that money came from and why did it take 18 months? That's it's 2021 now. So that's where we really add value. And the other thing that we do is that we created some business models on our own. So, which means that if you control the pipe in, like the music going to the customer, and the pipe out, like the money traveling back to the artist, if you have like 100% control over those two pipelines, it's super transparent. It's super fair. It's sustainable. So that's where we really differ from the big corporate. I don't think that they like the word corporate, but they are corporate. Like thousands of people working there. The Spotify's and the Deezer's and the Pandora's and the other ones.
Yeah.
They do a great job, but I think for that specific part, like how can we help independent artists who are actually somewhere in the long tail, hidden because nobody knows them, nobody hears them on national radio, national television. How can we help those folks? That's where we come in.
Yeah. No, that's really really amazing work, really. How does it differ from... I always had in mind that SoundCloud was like that proper alternative, but maybe they work in a similar way then to Spotify, Deezer, those guys. I haven't looked too much into the business models, but they always seem like the place where you find up-and-coming musicians in my mind. But
No, but you were right. And I actually had like in the early days when also SoundCloud was starting up, they were, I think, like 2 years earlier than we were. I think they were founded somewhere in 2006.
Yeah.
But like in the early days, I met with the founders like Alex. You have those music festivals and conferences where you meet each other with a cup of coffee, and you tell about your plans. And like funny enough, SoundCloud in the early days had that same mentality.
Yeah.
Like we want to be there for the individual creator. We want to do a different thing. The main focus for SoundCloud in the beginning is to transport huge big files of songs that were still in the editing mode, so they weren't finished yet, but
it
would just be a Dropbox kind of thing to move that file to the producer or to the studio or to the label.
That's interesting. So like an internal mechanism.
Yeah. Okay, and cool. They did that really well and super powerful, so that was a cool thing. Then somewhere down the line, venture capital firms came in and they said like, hey, but you know, you should be more like Spotify. You should be more like one of those services. So they started offering additional services, which in the end wasn't part of their core message, I guess, or their thing. They have a new CEO now, so it might turn back to where it once originated from. So I have good hopes that companies like SoundCloud will actually do more and more for people. And yeah, there are quite a few out there that are now focusing more on the core, like how can we help a singer songwriter? How can we help a lyricist? And not just like, how can we get this as quickly as possible to 10 million people who will listen and pay a few cents?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a big thing nowadays, especially like you see in the UK, at least, like nonstop kind of things coming out about how artists are struggling, how everyone around the artists are struggling. So the people put on their shows and stuff, because COVID has just wiped out such a large industry in a way there. And people are struggling to find those alternatives that actually make money for them that can be kind of distributed. And I think that's one of the exciting things about kind of what you guys are doing and what some other projects we've seen are doing. I just think it's such a need, especially now more than ever. And we don't know how long this COVID thing's going to run for, if the vaccine's going to work on all these different mutant strains and whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think people are very hopeful that we can get back to this kind of state that we were before.
Absolutely, Greg. And what I and it's harsh to say, but what you see last year and this year, of course, as well, is that when you have like income from live gigs, for example, so if you are an independent artist, but you do your way around, you know, the pubs and the clubs, and you play like 100 times a year, and you make some decent cash for yourself and for your band, then is there a sense of urgency to have like a proper discussion about boring things like, you know, optimizing value chains and looking at the way you license music and that kind of stuff? For most musicians, no. So
yeah, it's probably forced the issue.
So last year when they saw that all their live gigs were cancelled, all of a sudden they were focusing at Spotify, like, but you know, lucky me, I have my music on Spotify. And they focused for another month and another month. And they were like, there's actually no money coming in from Spotify. And of course, you know, my audience is growing and my friends and my family are listening via Spotify to my music. And so those things work. But it wasn't like it didn't generate any revenue. For us and sounds sad, but this is a great time for us to have those discussions to say, like, where are you in your career? What, you know, are you willing to put in half an hour more to actually read through the contracts that you signed, or to pick up the phone and call your national collecting society and ask if you can opt out some of your songs so that you're more flexible to test drive new business models? So that actually, yeah, strangely works a bit in our favor to have those discussions now, and also the attention from other people looking at us now saying like, They've saying this for 10 years that Tribe of Noise actually is a business model, but now all of a sudden we see it's the only, well, not the only one, but it's one of the few still left generating cash. So let's focus a little bit more on the Tribe of Noise model. So, strange times, and I hope we can go back to, you know, going to a pub and enjoy live music, and I hope that returns quickly. But for now, we can have those discussions. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I suppose it's been a wake-up call for many people. Like, some people had been smashing it on Spotify before, and then the smaller musicians were kind of like, it's just Spotify. You know, we got cash in hand from gigs and stuff that pays the bills, and then bam, okay, what am I doing? Oh, my God. No, it's interesting, isn't it, how it affects different people? And kind of changing gear a bit, how did you get into... So we've met each other through the Grant for the Web program, which is a fund that's looking to help build better business models for the web. Did you know about cryptocurrencies and stuff like that beforehand, which kind of which ties into this Grant for the Web thing, or was it the Grant for the Web first? Okay, yeah.
No, I did. I I look at all kinds of business models for the last 20 years, and I'm actually always on the foreground testing stuff. So I think Tribe of Noise was one of the first media companies ever in the world to test drive artificial intelligence with IBM Watson. We were one of the first media companies in the world that was on the cloud from Microsoft Azure. So we test, and then, you know, some things are worthwhile to you know, partner up with, and others you just go like, it's too early. So I think, you know, in the early days of crypto and blockchain, I visited, you know, all the festivals and the events in Berlin and in London and in San Francisco. And of course you have the folks there saying like, crypto will change the world and you know, this will democratize everything and overthrow governments. I was like, yeah, you know, maybe not, but let's have a grown-up talk about what this actually means and what the power is of crypto or the blockchain or the mechanism behind blockchain and crypto for that matter, and see if we can come up with decent business models that will that are actually sustainable. And then I prefer to do it like in you know, blocks of, let's say, what can we do in the upcoming 6 months or 12 months, and not say like in 6 months the world changed and no government will ever work and the dollar is worth nothing. And you know, I was witnessing those talks, so a healthy appetite for innovation, but also holding back a little bit about you know, too much noise saying that this was the new way forward. So funny enough, I ended up on stage during a blockchain event a couple of years ago in London, where there were other speakers invited, but I saw during a lunch break that one of the speakers of a session about the topic music in connection with blockchain couldn't make it to the event. So they were actually changing the agenda. And so I went to the organizers and said like, okay, my name is Hessel. I'm in this business for so many years. I'm investing in crypto. I'm investing in blockchain kind of environments. Shall I go on stage with the other people in the team and tell my story? And he was like, yeah, who are you? I was like, okay, check here's my LinkedIn profile. Check some of the articles I've written about this. And they did during the lunch break. So they went online and check me out. And they were like, wow, this is cool. There's a guy from Holland here. And we can just pull him as an international specialist into this panel. So I was there completely unprepared.
Yeah.
I had no idea who these other people were on the panel. And the only thing I could do at that stage, of course, was share my opinion about this industry, and you know, from time to time give some bold, like, straightforward answers where I thought that it was too much bullshit, and just say like, okay, this is where we have to stop, this is where we have to focus. And funny enough, in the audience were a couple of folks who actually liked that way of me presenting the story to the audience. So from there on, I actually got involved in blockchain projects. Also, you know, London-based project companies like Chainzy, which is run by Michael Minnelli. And Michael Minnelli is a bit of the godfather from some of the blockchain protocols. On the level like Sir Bernard Lee is for the internet. Michael Minnelli is in the UK. So we had chats with him. And the people, you know, in that specific group that I like to hang out with had that same mentality, like, you know, let's use it for tech for good. Let's just use it to improve stuff where we think stuff is broken, and not overthrow governments and stuff like that. So I had a couple of like years of those discussions and test runs and also with Tribe of Noise to see if it could work. So we had those MVPs and proof of concepts that we set up with some of those companies to say like, you know, if we would actually want a smart contract for a specific song and it travels all over the world to the other side, how can we do like a micropayment live? So we saw what happened, and we also saw that some things like now with Bitcoin, you see like how ridiculous expensive it's now to mine Bitcoins.
Yeah.
Transactions costs are going through the roof. So you know, Bitcoin is disqualified itself for some of these models now. So you have to look at other cryptocurrencies or other like protocols in the blockchain environment. So that was really fun. So again, when I met the people behind Grant for the Web, I asked the same questions, and I think that they liked me asking some of the more like in-depth questions, like I've been there, I've done that, but how's Grant for the Web?
You probably counted on a hand at that point how many people have been experimenting it in reality, like, yeah. So they must have been like refreshed that someone actually had been there and trying out all these different things in POC MVP forms.
But the cool thing is, and that's what I really liked about Grant for the Web and still like, is they also say, like, you know, probably a couple of things don't work, but we just have to go out there to as many people, to as many business projects, and of course, you know, we will scan the business projects to see if there are if there is a chance of success. But if there is a chance of success, let's put in some money there and let's build an MVP or proof of concept and let's move forward, because of course we can be cynical, and of course we can say, like, I've been there, I've done that, it probably doesn't work, but let's give it a fair chance. That's what Grant for the Web is really about. It's giving, you know, bright people and bright teams the opportunity with a bit of cash to actually do test runs and build POCs and then share the knowledge. So even that's the other thing what they say. Even if you fail, write it down. Why did you fail? Where did you fail? And you know, can we learn something about it so that the next team or the next project will actually take on this experience and try to do better? Yeah. So it's a super open sharing community, that's fun, really fun and energizing.
Yeah, it really is, actually. One of the things that I keep saying I've done quite a few interviews with people, other grantees and stuff now, it's just amazing that the breadth and width of projects they funded and the passions of the people doing those projects, it never ceases to amaze me, like I think there's an amazing driving force there that when someone doesn't have to, when you take out that kind of element of worrying about money and stuff like that, like the kind of explosion of creativity and stuff that comes out of that, it's just it's so broad at the moment. It's crazy. I think it's an amazing thing to be part of. So how are you implementing the web monetization stuff? Is it a stream of music for a stream of money, that sort of thing? Because that's what we're doing with live video, but it might be slightly different on the music side, or is it something else?
Yeah, so we Tribe of Noise acquired a iconic platform in end of 2019 in the States. That's called Free Music Archive. So if you type in the words free music on Google, you will end up on Free Music Archive. And the first thing we had to do was when we acquired it and did our due diligence, we saw that the backend wasn't up to par. So we had to fix that. So the first thing we had to do was rebuild the backend of Free Music Archive. And in that process, we actually started our chats with Grant for the Web. And they said, like, okay, if you're going to do that, then can you by design, you know, from the core, start to play around with web monetization. So with the tooling that we have available, and of course one of the first tools that they have available is from Coil, as you are aware of. So that's a plugin for your internet browser, and the moment when somebody has money on their Coil subscription and uses that internet browser plugin and hits a web page that is connected to that browser plugin, small amounts of money go from the wallet from the viewer to the person who actually owns that content or created the content or shared the content. So that was the first project. Like, okay, let's do that. Let's enable musicians, if they have a profile page on Free Music Archive with a couple of albums, with artwork, with their bio, their stories, maybe some video assets, enable them in their profile page to actually add a link, so that if people with one of these Coil wallets sees their webpage, small amounts of money will travel for the seconds that they view that page. So they right. can enjoy the music, they can read, but as long as they're on that page,
yep.
Money travels to the artist. That works, you know, like so we have implemented it last year, finished that in November 2020. And any artist, so we're now pushing towards artists saying like, dear artist, it might not be like a super money maker, you're not going to buy your next car with this, but be aware, there are a lot of folks out there that are interested in this mechanism. So just enable that functionality on your page, your free music archive, so that if people look at your page, money transfers directly to your account. The second thing, and that's also because that Grant for the Web community is so open, we saw that people are starting to talk about, hey, but can we use that same plugin for tipping? Or can't we sell tickets to a live event of a musician?
Yeah.
And then based on the ticket sales, you will also have access to, because that's really the cool thing about Coil that I didn't tell your listeners about yet, is that Coil works for all the websites that have that functionality enabled. So it means that the end user pays like a $5 subscription fee per month to use that plugin. But for that money, he will have access to all kinds of content, from images to photos to, you know, journalism masterpieces, music, all the websites that participate. He can use that, and those micropayments will go to those owners. So we thought like the next phase for us now is to actually enable musicians to be way more creative, start uploading maybe premium content, start inviting their fans to live events on that specific page, and just yeah. you know, pay-per-view, pay-per-ticket, pay whatever, do donations, which is 10 times easier than you know, PayPal donate buttons or all the other ones that you have out yeah. there, because it will just be a plugin functionality where you just click donate a dollar, click bots, and there, you know, the money is transferred. And again,
I think an important point there is like the end receiver of that receives more of it. So you mentioned PayPal take a cut of any payment that they do.
True. But I think because what we've done in the process for Grant for the Web, and that's because we have roughly 550,000 subscribers on Free Music Archive.
Wow. Yeah.
So we've done like polls, interviews, in-depth surveys. So for the last year, we've been asking questions about how can we monetize? Are you willing to pay for this? Are you willing to pay for that? Are you using PayPal? Do you feel comfortable with using something like Coil that you might not have heard of, but, you know, be an early adopter? Does that frighten you, or is that okay with you? So we have done a lot of research, and also amongst the musicians, like, you know, is this a way that you want to participate? And it's really cool that most of the musicians, when I say, for example, to them, those are micropayments, but they happen live. So if you open your wallet, and just have that as an additional window open on your computer, if people browse your website, you live see those micropayments coming in, which is addictive. I can tell. Yeah. It's really addictive to see. It doesn't matter what the number is, but if you see like a number going up like during the day live, it's super addictive to see that mechanism work. The psychology like up to here. But they are used to getting paid once, you know, on our website once a month,
yeah.
and on other services once every 18 or 20 or 24 months. Yeah. So getting live payments, even small ones, that's an eye opener for them. So they love just the fact that they can see that they control, that there is some form of like transparency of money going in. And what we also see from the people that actually use it, I think one of the strongest features about specifically Coil is people subscribe to the open internet with additional content, and that for the additional content or for access to the content or for donating for content, they only pay $5 per month, and it's an all you can eat kind of like setup. And they just love that, because I'm subscribed to Disney, I'm subscribed to Netflix. I'm subscribed to Tidal. I'm subscribed to Spotify. I have a SoundCloud subscription. And you pay for every vertical. You pay your dollars. And so when I'm super annoyed when I go to, let's say, Spotify, and maybe I'm lying now, but let's say Spotify, and I want to find a specific album of the Beastie Boys. And let's say that specific album is not there, and I just pay 10 euros for my monthly subscription.
I
get really annoyed. With this system, I travel the internet, find my content, and know that when I consume that content and listen to that content, there is a direct link payment-wise between me and the person who uploaded the content, and in most cases, the people who own the content. I really love that. And it's early days. I completely understand that. And but just wait until bigger organizations start to adopt, or when the W3C as a standard organization pushes a standard, like a payment standard like this, forward. Yes. Those are the days, you know, when big corporates go like, oh, okay, it's a standard now. Oh, okay, let's incorporate this.
And I suppose kind of wrapping up, because I'm wary, we've probably chatted away quite a bit. It's been really interesting. Is there any other kind of projects in like the crypto sphere or outside of that, maybe, that are kind of interest for you? So outside of Grant for the Web and all that, like, is there anything else you're kind of POCing at the moment which would be interesting to look into?
Yeah, well, what we're trying to do now for this year is, and this is also an idea that's not top of mind for the last 5 years, but you know, from time to time we have those board meetings to say, like, really have to, like, put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah.
I think it starts to become clearer and clearer on a daily basis that any individual rights holder, not just musicians, but also like a photographer or video makers or whatever, book writers, authors, have an online digital home, like a dashboard,
yep,
where they can uniquely identify themselves. So a global unique identifier for the person, the rights holder, with a open database structure, so that there's always like an easy access to find the rights holder in an open database. So say like, I found this, the hashtag, now I know who's behind this person. And from there, try to add assets to that unique identifier for the person. So that whatever happens with an asset, and an asset can be a photo, an asset can be a complete book or a song or a video asset, always the unique identifier of the maker travels with the asset, wherever it goes. How, you know, when it's remixed or shared or whatever, there are all kinds of other like beautiful mechanisms to do, like sharing and remixing, like Creative Commons licensing, for example. That we establish that open culture where individuals are always connected to a unique identifier and therefore their assets as well.
Yeah.
And then travel. That's something I think it's time to. And I know in the UK there's a beautiful project now for musicians. It's done by the team from Imogen Heap. It's called the Creative Passport. Okay. So she's really trying to pull this off for musicians. But I think in a way broader perspective, like, it should actually be for every individual creator, that there is an opportunity for them to be verified, be identified, and just make sure that under that unique identifier there are assets, and those assets, wherever they travel, there's always like a digital fingerprint saying like, if you want to do something outside of the scope of the license, here can, you know, this is a way to contact the rights holder. This is a way to send a form of remuneration, or like negotiate a better deal for you between the two of you. Something I really love to get my hands on, and I think this year we'll make a proper start.
Yeah, I think like the confluence of different technologies, I haven't looked too deeply into them, but sovereign ID stuff, like the privacy stuff, all those kind of blockchain projects are coming into much more into kind of where you can start picking up and using them. And I think it'll be so interesting that tying it back into smart contracts, revenue sharing through web monetization, all those sorts of good stuff. It's going to be a really interesting mixing pot.
Yeah. It seems that all these pieces of the puzzle are getting together. Maybe not this year, but we're getting there. And even like things that are around for a couple of years, like the e-residency from Estonia.
Yeah.
That's also, you know, a great example of how you can digitize and unique identifiers for individuals, and from there just add services to it.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I have your ID card number digitally, so now you are like an e-residence of Estonia or of the world, and we can offer you all these services because we recognize you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I love those concepts. So I think it's time now to actually step up, make sure that we have an even bigger social impact on people that are completely unaware that we are chatting about this, you know, monetization model like COIL and web grant for the web. People in Indonesia or in South Africa or wherever, and help them with a structured way to access global markets and based on the quality of the content and not based on the color of their skin or that they were born in the wrong country. That shouldn't matter.
Yeah, definitely. So it's that democratization, like you say, of everything, hopefully comes to pass.
Yeah. So let's work on that. And and if some of your listeners or yourself or somebody that you talk with in the upcoming months likes this story or likes to connect, we're super open. So they can always send me an email or hit me on social media. And
We'll have it in the social notes. I guess wrapping up. Like Hessel said, please check out stuff like Grant for the Web. Again, it'll all be in the show notes where you can get all those links. And really for me, just a thank you to Hessel for your brilliant conversation. I think it's been really interesting.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone listening. Thanks for tuning in to Just a Meme, where we're talking about the future of making money on the web. Please do get involved. Give us a like, send some comments and a review. Please also subscribe to check out the next sessions and spread the words to your friends. So thanks. That's it. Thanks, Hessel, once again. And brilliant talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Cheers.